Hello and welcome to Chief Among Friends. I'm your host, Dr. Chris Hobson, the Chief Medical Officer at Orion Health. On this podcast, I chat about topics ranging from technology priorities to new innovations in integrated and coordinated care to healthcare sustainability. You can follow the conversation on hashtag Chief Among Friends and be sure to follow me on Twitter at Dr. Chris Hobson. There's a lot of discussion in the health technology industry about payers and providers working more closely together, and even the relatively new concept of payvider. Certainly from a value-based care perspective, it's essential to know both the cost and quality of healthcare being provided, and payers clearly have a lot to offer when it comes to data about their patients and the cost of care delivery. Orion Health and the eHealth Initiative recently surveyed health information exchanges with respect to their technology plans. We were impressed to see that many HIEs already have significant payer participation. Technology vendors are supporting some of the relevant technology, such as aggregating claims and clinical data, providing access via FHIR APIs, and advanced analytics beyond the standard quality measures. Today, we are very fortunate to have with us my friend Joni Pidcock. She is Director of Payer Product and Services at Orion Health. She's here to give us her perspective, advice, and recommendations on the role of payers in HIEs and population health. Good morning and welcome, Joni.
Thank you, Chris. Good morning.
Good morning. So, Joni, why are payers working more closely with providers now?
In a word, I'd say it's incentives. Between value-based contracts, accountable care, bundled payments, new O&C and CMS interoperability requirements, and a shift in expectations from consumers and employer groups. But it's also a shift in strategy and experience from both entities. So payers and providers didn't believe that they could shift profitability through collaboration, then they probably wouldn't waste the resources. But I also think it's indicative of changes in leadership from both organizations. I've seen payers and hospital organizations hiring transformation leaders from other industries that have gone through change due to government regulations and decrease in customer satisfaction. And seeing more former finance executives in patient engagement leadership roles at payer organizations. They see the value of data-driven initiatives. And due to the lack of interoperability in healthcare, collaboration really is the fastest route to obtaining that data. So in order to provide that triple aim, the high quality healthcare, lowering costs, and increasing patient engagement, payers and providers need to be able to understand the complete clinical view of their members. And with the adoption of value-based contracts and more financial and risk accountability for the providers, you're seeing both entities actively investing in integrating data and operations so they can provide as much real-time information as possible to assist in meeting contractual obligations.
That's interesting. So it sounds like a fairly clear trend. Why are payers interested in health information exchange and interoperability?
So I'm seeing payer interest and integration with HIEs as definitely a growing trend. Payers see the potential for better access to clinical data, both inside and outside of their payer geographical region, as being key to their data acquisition strategy. Data acquisition is a lengthy and costly effort, and it's rife with data quality and collaboration issues. So being able to add a public HIE to that data acquisition strategy allows payers to benefit from the work that these HIEs have already accomplished. You mentioned the 2019 HIE survey, which was done last year by eHealth Initiative Foundation and Orion Health. And in that survey, 67% of the 35 responding HIEs said that they have seen a significant or very significant increase in payer demand for clinical data access. And I personally have seen our Orion customers adding payer integration into their HIE strategy, and our payer customers showing increased interest in adding HIE to their payer data exchange to fill in gaps on clinical data, specifically for the commercial members that are completely in a different part of the country than the payers traditionally cover. And then strategically, I think that payers that cover that particular geographic region would benefit from collaborating with a local regional HIE to provide a regional all-payer view of provider for providers to be able to access patient data.
And when payers are involved in health information exchange, what role do they play?
So the role I'm seeing and hearing more about for payers in public HIEs are first and foremost medical and pharmaceutical claims data. HIEs are looking to extend their capabilities and offerings, and adding claims data will only enhance the patient long record that they have to offer the providers in their regions. And that data is important when providing population health management tools and analytics for providers, which we're also seeing the HIE building more and more.
Interesting. So I think we've talked about it already, but perhaps go into the specifics for us, please. So what are the benefits of having payer and provider data accessible in a single view?
So from a payer perspective, a combined patient long record, so as you were talking about that, the payer and provider data in that single view, that combines clinical and payer data will give the payer a more holistic view of patient care to better understand what's going on between patient engagement with their preferred providers and their members. More information to understand what drives healthcare quality and the clinical steps that lead to the financial outcomes that they are seeing from the claims data. But from a provider's perspective, a payer clinical patient long record can provide additional clinical claims data for their patient if that patient has seen providers that are outside of their provider organization but are associated with the payer. So it's a little confusing, but for example, if a primary care provider needs to be able to see OBGYN labs and claims for their patient, and that OBGYN is outside of their provider organization, they don't have direct access to that information, at least not from an electronic perspective. But if a payer-driven patient long record, so a payer long record that includes the clinical and payer data is available, then that payer can provide the claims and clinical data on behalf of that member to the provider that gives insights to the primary care provider in an electronic way, more real time. And of course, access to this information can help provide valuable information for making clinical care decisions, avoiding repeating costly tests, and for filling in medical and pharmaceutical history that may be missed by the patients. Now, I say that's the provider's perspective, but at the end of the day, it's the payer's goal to ensure that providers have information that is going to help the providers meet value-based contracts, as well as the quality measures that are required for payers.
So moving from just aggregating the data and viewing combined clinical and claims and moving to some other kind of use cases, one of the recent use cases in the Da Vinci project is the prior authorization. Do you see that being widely adopted, and how do you see that evolving over time?
I do see that being widely adopted. Specifically, the Da Vinci project use case for electronic prior auth, they're seeing significant participation and investments from all areas of healthcare and the health IT industry. There is high value from gaining a much more rapid decision about the requested authorization. And we're seeing our Orion customers today utilizing FHIR APIs for clinical workflows and interoperability with great success. And in the industry overall, those companies that have invested in FHIR will be able to easily adopt the prior auth FHIR workflows because they've already, you know, have the building blocks in place. And there's a lot of buzz around the governing bodies such as CMS and ONC that are working to require API access to healthcare data for the consumer, for the patient, and also for interoperability between the entities, providers, payers, and technology companies. So I think that there is enough momentum for FHIR that this definitely has the potential for being widely adopted. These prior auth workflows or the more traditional payer workflows that the Da Vinci project is focused on are also going to be of interest to the traditional public HIEs because being able to provide a workflow for authorizations within the HIE is something that is a value add for the providers within the public HIEs as well. So I definitely see that as having high potential.
So talking about health information exchange, FHIR APIs and interoperability, at the moment we have interoperability proposals in the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, NPRM, from ONC, which would actually require providers and payers to set up APIs. Do you expect that that will be part of the final rule? And if so, do you see challenges, or how can payers best go about complying with those requirements?
So I do definitely see that as being a part of the final rule as to what level of API that needs to be made available, be it an HL7 standard or FHIR or some sort of custom option. That may be up for debate as a part of the consideration for that rule. But I do think that having API access to the data is definitely the direction they're moving into. And I guess just like any other entity within our industry, payers have a lot of options for complying with this type of requirement. APIs are definitely available within the HIEs today. A lot of the EHR technologies have them, and interoperability exchange platforms have them as well. The payers that I work closely with are already utilizing FHIR and have an understanding that FHIR APIs is the future. And regardless of whether or not the ONC requires FHIR, we are seeing that CMS is going to require FHIR-enabled APIs to be able to send to the consumer or the member from the payer. So I think that will end up combining as the requirement, and the payers will follow suit.
The information blocking proposals in the 21st Century Cures Act, a notice of proposed rulemaking, would penalize payers, providers, and even technology companies that fail to share information. This has been criticized by some as being too confusing, given the need to also comply with HIPAA. Do you think that the proposal will be workable for payers, providers, and technology companies?
I do think it will be. I think it's a big change, right? And a big shift in the industry. And of course, change and shift always take time for people to come to the table for. HIPAA is often described as legislation that restricts health information sharing, when in reality, they are guidelines for proper data sharing. And if applied appropriately, there's no reason why this information can't be shared for the clinical purposes and maintain HIPAA compliance. So I read difficult, confusing, whatever the feedback is that we hear, as too expensive and a move that will that doesn't quite match the strategy of the entity that we're discussing, the payer, the provider, and the technology company. And not to downplay cost, it most likely will be very costly, especially if the payer, provider, tech company hasn't prioritized some sort of secure HIPAA-compliant data exchange. But there's momentum there, and this is the logical next step in removing those barriers for global interoperability. Now, the information blocking proposal includes, you know, 7 pretty general exceptions to the information blocking penalties. And so while, again, that ends up with a lot of red tape and administrative burden, there is a path to being able to be compliant without having to completely change all strategies within the payer and provider technology companies.
Thank you so much, Joni. That's a really great discussion of some really interesting and current topics. Thank you so much for joining us. If you'd like to join us for future episodes of this podcast, please follow us on #ChiefAmongFriends and on Twitter @DrChrisHobson.